Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we've got a bonus episode. That's right. It's a new month. It's a new bonus show. Every month we do a bonus show for the supporters. You know where you can go to support your show, support your favorite show. Apple Podcast. You just join the premium by mashing the button. Go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher or come to your boys' one and only IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section. Compare all three of those options on IlluminatiWatcher.com. Hit the VIP tab up top on the menu and you're in. Now, today we're going to talk about this insane 3-hour interview between Joe Rogan and Cat Williams, two of the greatest. If you thought Cat Williams spilled the tea on the Shay Shay Club Shay Shay show or whatever in January, no, that ain't it. That ain't it. I did a full analysis of that on the free feed back in January, I guess it was. But wait until you listen to this show. I'm going to explain the symbolism of what these two were getting into. I'm going to break it down because if you didn't really pay attention or if you didn't know what these coded messages and topics were, then you might not think there was a whole lot going on there. But it was a very high-octane discussion of all things occult. These are the concepts of the past and the future, where we come from and where we're going, according to the occult. It's a very important conversation. We need to unpack the whole thing. From Hermes Trismegistus or Thoth to the Illuminated Ones, the global elites that you hear Joe Rogan talking about when he talks about the World Economic Forum, to Gnosis, the knowledge, the wisdom, the information, and golems fusing spirits into man, the alien religion. This is all connected. These guys are hitting on the biggest subjects philosophically of our time. This is the most occult interview I've ever heard, and I'm going to decode it for you. These guys are the modern-day philosophers, and it's an important conversation, and you're not going to get this kind of conversation literally anywhere else. You think CNN and Fox News are going to let these two go on for 3 hours? No. That's why podcasting is the revolution. It's where the real information, the truth seekers, get real information about our world. And we're going to get into it. I'm just going to go right into it. So if you're a supporter and you're in for this decoding of the occult symbolism, thank you for your support. You keep the show alive. I say that. I mean that. That's you. Thank you very much. This is every month I try to give back a little bit, and here's my way of doing that. Oh, also, explicit lyric warning, folks. All right. If you don't like the swearing words, you're not going to like the show. So maybe this isn't for you, because there are going to be some bombs dropped by Mr. Joe Rogan himself, and I'm not here to censor. Maybe I'll join in on the cussing party. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But I'd like to give you that warning, because I know some of you guys are like, man, I can't listen to this. I got my kids in the minivan or whatever, wherever you listen to this. So you've been forewarned. All right, let's go. Oh, also, another thing. This is the first time that I noticed that Joe Rogan, his studio, has got red curtains. And, of course, you know where that comes from. The world of David Lynch. That's right. We talked about it on the Wizard of Oz shows. We talk about it on the Twin Peaks shows. By the way, I got new Twin Peaks. I think I've got every size left. There's only like onesies of a couple sizes on the new Laura Palmer shirt. All right. So if you were going to get another Twin Peaks shirt, I'm not reprinting this. Go to gumroad.com/IsaacW and get your Laura Palmer Red Room She's Filled with Secrets shirt. All right. Thank you. Thank you for the people that already bought it. So, but I'm running out of a couple sizes. Now, Joe Rogan, Cat Williams, interesting talk right off the bat. And I'm gonna play for you guys, I think, 5 clips because, you know, it's a 3-hour show. And I'm trying to consolidate your time by paraphrasing and breezing through it. So I'm not going to play every clip that I'm going to talk about. I'm going to paraphrase you. I'm going to be the timestamps guy for you right now. All right. At the beginning, in the first 5 minutes, they have an interesting talk about how there's only so many stand-up comics in the world, maybe 250 that are decent at it, which is interesting, right? And they discuss how talking for a living is quite an honor, which I felt a little bit, what's the right word here? You know, blessed for that. I was like, you know what? That's a good point. Because I pretty much talk for a living podcasting, and I try to do good at it for you. But I, you know, speaking is not my forte. If you know my background, I was an engineer, so this has been a long, windy road for me. Back in the low T Isaac days in the early 2014 podcasting. Joe points out that people will see stand-up comics or people who talk for a living, I'm internalizing it as podcasters, and people will say, geez, that person's up there just talking. I can do that. You're just talking. And people don't really know what it takes to be a good stand-up comic. And I apply that to podcasting as well, because I've had many people approach me to talk about, hey, I want to start a podcast. How do I do this? How do you do it? And there's so much that goes into it. And, you know, I don't profess to have the greatest podcast on earth. I'm a one-man army, and I'm still figuring out the technology and stuff. But I do know what it takes to have a successful podcast, because I've been doing this for so long. This is my 10th year, 11th year or something now. And I think a lot of people assume that they can do it because they think, oh, you're just talking into a mic. I'm going to get my buddies and we're going to get drunk and we're going to have a great conversation. It's going to be hilarious. And we're going to do it every week and it's going to be funny and people are going to like it, right? But there's so much work that goes behind the scenes. There's so much research and preparation and, you know, information and knowledge of an understanding of technologies and copywriting in the terms of gaining people's attention. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And that's what's interesting, because Kat and Joe talk about this. They say, look, it's the same with stand-up comedy. There's so much preparation that goes into this. People have no freaking clue. And that's what it's like for me. I don't watch one piece of entertainment without having a note on my phone about, okay, this happens at this point, you know, because I don't know if it's going to lead to something that's worth talking about or not. It becomes your entire life. And I imagine that's what stand-up comedy is like. You know, you're writing down observations and things that you think is funny as it comes to you. It kind of takes over your whole being. Anyway, around the 6-minute mark, I'm going to play this clip for you, though. They talk about the future of technology and taking away our freedoms to do certain things like driving. In the promise of safety, they always exchange safety, right, for our rights. That's what they do. And they have an interesting conversation about how there is a technology that can control our vehicles. If your vehicle has a computer in it, they can control it. And they talk about a reporter named Michael Hastings, and this goes back to 2014, I think is what they say. Anyway, I'm gonna play it for you, and then I'm gonna start doing a little decoding of stuff further behind the scenes of what they didn't talk about. Take a listen.
There's recklessness, but there's safety.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it gets to the essence of a being.
And I think it's a thing that won't exist 100 years from now. I think automated driving will be mandatory. I really do. I think we're about 100 years away. 100 years away from no personal automobiles. No control over your vehicle. We're going to stop all crashes. We could stop all crashes and all highway deaths. Come on, Kat. Won't you contribute and give up all your rights to drive? We're going to stop all death.
Yeah, it's not. But understand that it... all of these things have financial benefits, and then they use those perks you just mentioned to get you in. But
But somebody's making money.
I believe that it'll be mandatory, but for practical reasons, like this thing where the police want you and they have to chase you and you may get away. Those days are done.
Yeah, they're just gonna shut your car off. Yeah.
Your car is going to do what they tell it to do, which is get behind this patrol car and follow us to the station.
There's speculation that they've had that for a long time, you know. There was that famous journalist, Michael Hastings, that was his name. There's this journalist. I don't know if you know this story, but it's pretty crazy. This guy went to Afghanistan. So Afghanistan with the troops, and he was only supposed to be there writing a Rolling Stone article about this general for a very short amount of time. But then there was the volcano in Iceland, and the volcano in Iceland stopped air travel. So this journalist from the Rolling Stone was embedded in this troop, and they started talking shit. And he started reporting the shit that they were talking, including disparaging comments that the general had said about Obama. So the general gets back. He has to retire. He has to, you know, it's the Rolling Stone exposed. It's a big deal because everybody loves his general. So he retires, and this Michael Hastings guy is on the run, and he's terrified. He's telling people, if I commit suicide. I did not kill myself. People are threatening my life. And then he's going down La Brea, and his car is going like 120 miles an hour and just slams into a tree and explodes. And there's a video footage of it. This dude is just flying. Look at that, flying down the street. Hits a tree, and the car explodes. And they asked security experts at that time. I think this was like 2005, 4? 2004, 2005? Is it possible to control a vehicle remotely? They said, does your vehicle have a computer? If your vehicle has a computer, they can control it. Period. There's a way.
And they know that.
And they've been doing that for... this is...
2010.
2010. So this is 14 fucking years ago.
Easy peasy.
If they could do that then, what can they do now? Let's just shut your fucking car right off.
Now, what's interesting is that I did cover this story on my blog back in 2014, because this was right after Paul Walker died. All right, remember Paul Walker from Fast and Furious? And some little gems I pulled out for you, because of course you know my history. I had to shut down the blog because, I don't know, I'm just a bad boy apparently. But General McChrystal, the guy who Michael Hastings, the reporter Michael Hastings, who said the negative stuff apparently about Obama and Biden, he was actually a member of Bohemian Grove. So he was plugged into these elites, and they had the dirt on him, so of course they can make him retire. Because you know what goes down to the Bohemian Grove, as Richard Nixon said, a bunch of F-A-G-G-Y stuff. Isn't that what he said? And, you know, it's not very far off from what we hear about the Skull and Bones and their alleged fraternity initiations, right? Because they need the blackmail. And interesting enough, we're seeing the Diddy stuff unfold even further. We did a show on Diddy a few months ago, and that was one of my predictions for 24, was the crash and burn of Diddy was coming. And, man, I don't know if I'm going to do a whole show on it, but there's this rapper who dropped a whole bunch of information about, you know, homo things with Diddy and Meek Mill. Oh, boy, it's getting bad. But anyways, the idea is that he was in some kind of Epstein blackmail circle, possibly. And that's what they do. They use this stuff as blackmail. I read that Rolling Stone article, and I'm going off of memory here, so I could be wrong, but General McChrystal, he was kind of a badass dude. He would eat, because he was a special ops dude, but he would eat one meal a day. He would eat dinner, and that was it. But every now and then, he would sneak pretzels in, and I thought, that's my man right there. I love pretzels. So I identify with that. But anyways, back when Paul Walker died, there was all these interesting ideas of, because they thought the same thing about Paul Walker, that his car crashed because the powers that be took management of his computer and crashed it into a tree. You recall that there was an Operation Fast and Furious. There was a cover-up of a secretive op to trade guns with the Mexican cartel that, I don't know, the ABCs were doing, whatever. But anyways, the idea was that, interesting, they would call it the Operation Fast and Furious around the same time of Paul Walker's death, who was in the film Fast and Furious. Paul Walker was also in The Skulls, a movie about the Skull and Bones. And then you've got some interesting synchromysticism by way of James Shelby Downard's King Kill 33. Because the family dog on Family Guy, the dog Brian, died in 2014, I guess, on the show. I'd never seen it. I have seen it. I didn't follow it like that. So I wrote this in my article, so it must have happened. And it was just 6 weeks prior to the death of Paul Walker. Now, Paul Walker's character on Fast and Furious, his name was Brian O'Connor. And also the ATF agent who was behind the ATF Operation Fast and Furious, his name was Brian Terry, and he was killed during one of the transactions. That's three Brians and deaths, right? And if you, of course, read James Shelby Downer's King Kill 33, you'll know that the three assassins of Freemasonry, or the three hobos, is the calling card of the Illuminati in ritualistic synchromysticism terms. And I think we'll come back to that in my notes. Pretty sure we come back to that. Yeah, that's right. We do. Because we're going to talk about the Kybalion, the three initiates. We're going to talk about that some more. Back to the interview. Oh, another thing that we talked about on Paul Walker was he was interested in Bitcoin. He was a big proponent of it way back when, in 2014, right? Remember that? We were talking about it way back then. Around the 9-minute mark, Cat Williams talked about how our world is a circle, and once you're aware of that, you see how all things are connected, and things from the past will happen again in the future. Now, this was interesting because if you're following the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series, we talk about this. This is a recurring theme in Twin Peaks, the samsara, the circular pattern of life. And around this time, Joe also talks about the shadow government, meaning there's a deep state, and these guys, they never change out. They don't need to be elected. They're in there, and they're not moving. That's the swamp that we heard Trump talking about. It's the deep state theories. Bill Cooper talked about a shadow government. The idea is that these people are already in place and you can't elect them out. You don't even know who they are. Cat Williams mentions the Illuminati. And they talk about this idea about how when you're so wealthy, you eventually get bored when you have so much money that you got to focus on something else. And what are they going to focus on? Overpopulation. And this takes me into some hope. My brain goes into many realms. One is the Georgia Guidestones, which I am preparing a big show on. That might be my next show, actually. The Georgia Guidestones. Because I don't know if you know, but CNN released an article talking, basically revealing who it was. And, of course, this guy is Illuminate Confirm. And I'm going to do a whole show about it. So stay subscribed now, folks. Don't go nowhere. But the it's interesting because I was actually just reading about how the life expect... Because I was talking... Let me give you a background. I was talking to a financial guy about, like, how do I prepare for retirement? And one of the ideas was that the formula for how much money you need to have is based upon how long you're going to live, obviously. And he said, well, your life expectancy by the time you hit this age is going to be in the 90s. I said, bro, the 90s? What are you talking about, dude? And I looked up the life expectancy graph, and it does actually make sense. It's a pretty linear graph since they started recording it, late 1800s, I don't know. And what's interesting, though, is that in 2020, for the first time and only time, ever since it was going up linearly, right? Picture that. Linearly. Sorry. Mumbling. And in 2020, it drops. In 2021, it drops. In 2022, it drops. Life expectancy is dropping. It was increasing, and now it's dropping. Now, it's probably just a glitch. Because statistically, if you followed it out, you'd probably think, even if you compensate for that drop, okay, I'll probably make it to the 90s. But it's interesting that it's dropping. And the reason for it, because I had to look up some studies, I said, why the heck is it dropping? And they say it's because of the increases of death due to the pandemic, as well as overdoses, meaning fentanyl. All right? Now, I think, call me crazy, but I would say that if the thing from 2020 came from a lab, it was built by design. And fentanyl also, I think, is built by design because they want to get rid of people because of this overpopulation belief that the elites have. And I just think that's interesting. I do think that's an element of this. I think that Georgia Guidestones, I used to kind of question it, but after doing some research that I have yet to record the show on, I'm like, oh yeah, that was Illuminate Confirmed. I'm actually okay with the dude blowing it up. At first, I was against it. I said, dude, don't be blowing it up, man. But now I'm like, eh, it's fine. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't recommend doing it. You're still breaking the law. You shouldn't do it. But I don't feel bad about it. Around the 12-minute mark, I know I got to get moving. We got 3 hours to get through. Around the 12-minute mark, they have this great talk about how all drugs come from plants, meaning that, you know, he says there's 6,000 Chinese herbs. They've known about this forever, and we want to act like Big Pharma is the only place to get these solutions. And Joe Rogan talks about how that's all, of course, government propaganda from Big Pharma. And I looked this up, all right? And this is where we could, this is, again, interesting philosophical conversation here. Because the idea that Kat presents is that all medicine, current Big Pharma medicine, pills and prescriptions, actually just comes from plants and herbs. It comes from the Chinese, you know, stuff they've been doing for hundreds of years. And if you recall, I did a show, I don't even remember when, a couple years ago, we talked about, oh, I think it was on my 2020 series about the solution for the thing from 2020 that will never go away. I think that was where we talked about the history of the Rockefellers shutting down all of the alternative medicine schools and saying, no, we're going to teach one Western medicine idea, and that is it. All right. But I hadn't heard that all medicine comes from plants or herbs. I thought, well, that kind of makes sense. I don't know. Let's look it up. So I Googler around, and I go to USDA.gov, and they actually tell you about it. So, you know, so much for the government propaganda, Joe. Come on. There's a government website straight up telling us this. And that's my beef with the whole conspiracy movement, is that they blame everything on the government, but never bring up the corporations. Not nearly as much, I should say. And I'd argue that even if, because I'm certainly not saying that, you know, they're entirely wrong, but even elements where they point to the government as the problem, I think if you dig deeper into it, you would find corporations and lobbyists influencing politicians. Greed, right? The capitalist system. Anyhow, there's an article on USDA.gov called Medicinal Botany, and I'm going to read to you right from it. It talks about the history of medicine going all the way back. I'm going to fast forward a bunch. In 1803, morphine became one of the first drugs to be isolated from a plant. It was identified by Frederick Sertimer in Germany. He was able to extract white crystal from crude opium poppy. Scientists soon used similar techniques to produce aconitine from monk's hood, emmentine from, oh boy, bunch of stuff, from herbs, barks, and things like that. In 1852, scientists were able to synthesize salicin, an active ingredient in willow bark, for the first time. By 1899, the drug company Bayer modified salicin into a milder form of acetylsalicylic acid and launched aspirin into our world. So far, cat's on the money. I was like, damn, that's a good point. I mean, I didn't know what I thought medicine was. I don't know. I thought it was in a chemical in a lab or something. The synthetic age was born, and in the following 100 years, plant extracts have filled pharmacy shelves. Although many medicines have been produced from plant extracts, chemists sometimes find that synthetic versions do not carry the same therapeutic effects or may have negative side effects not found when using the whole plant source. A full 40% of the drugs behind the pharmacist counter in the Western world are derived from plants that people have used for centuries, including the top 20 best-selling prescription drugs in the United States today. For example, quinine, extracted from the bark of the South American cinchona tree, relieves malaria, and licorice root has been an ingredient in cough drops for more than 3,500 years. Cat was right. I mean, kind of. It's certainly not 100% of all drugs, but it's the top 20. That's impressive. And they say 40%. It's kind of surprising. And then on top of that, they even call out and say, look, even the synthetic modified versions aren't nearly as good as the whole original. So what's up with that? And to prove my point earlier about how the things that we blame the government for actually, if you follow it back to the source, it goes back to corporations and lobbyists. I'm going to keep reading to you from the same webpage. Consumers routinely assume that the medications they take and the food they ingest have been scrupulously studied by the FDA, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. They assume that many of these products are safe because they are natural. However, many herbals have never been seriously tested for efficacy or toxicity. The Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994 eliminated the authority of the FDA to regulate vitamins, herbs, and other food-based products, and therefore the U.S. FDA does not regulate the use of any herbal supplement. Okay? And I know the libertarian argument is, good, we don't need that level of oversight and bureaucracy. Let people make the herbs that they want to make. I mean, that's not a totally irrational argument. But what it's saying is that the FDA could be regulating herbs, but nobody actually does because of that legislation from 1994. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Let's look that up. What was the rationale behind that? I'm going to read you from Wikipedia. Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, and Tom Harkin, Democrat from Iowa, introduced the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act in 1994. On October 25th, 1994, President Bill Clinton signed the act into law, saying that after several years of intense efforts, manufacturers, experts in nutrition, and legislators, acting in a conscientious alliance with consumers at the grassroots level, have moved successfully to bring common sense to the treatment of dietary supplements under regulation and law. Hatch had significant financial support from supplement manufacturers, including multi-level marketing firms Zango and Herbalife. So there you go. Orrin Hatch, who introduced the thing, had significant financial support from the people who wanted this legislation. And lots of those multi-level marketing herb products and supplements are part of the whole New Age conspiracy grift movement. And I'm not saying that they're all wrong. I mean, I take a ton of supplements, right? I don't know the answer, though. I just think you got to question it, is all I'm saying. Because these herbs and supplements can make all kinds of claims that aren't true because no one's giving them oversight. They're promising all these things. And plus, Dr. Oz was co-opting a lot of this stuff over the years. And I live in Utah. It's the epicenter of multi-level marketing fraudster schemes. I've been offered to be in part of the pyramid schemes many times. Lots of people are into it, trust me. Example would be that Zango that was paying off Orrin Hatch to make this legislation go through. They're from Salt Lake City, and they were producing supplements with mangosteen, which I actually bought forever ago because I used to watch Dr. Oz religiously every day in the 2000s, all the time. And I would try to buy most of his products that he talked about because he's a good salesman. Anytime he had a product, it would be sold out half the time when you looked for it. Like, was it buckthorn? And I remember looking for all kinds of crazy stuff. But, you know, and Herbalife is the same thing. Oh, the founder of Herbalife, this was interesting. Mark Hughes, he died at 44 with an estate worth $400 million. Now I see why everyone's into these pyramid marketing schemes. I think, man, I should do that too. He died because he apparently mixed a ton of booze with some antidepressant. No Herbalife, apparently. I don't know. But anyway, my whole point, let's zoom back out. Cat Williams isn't entirely wrong. A lot of our medicine comes from nature. Nature has the tools that we need. Then around the 13-minute mark, I know, you're like, Isaac, we got to get to 3 hours, homeboy. You better hustle. And I'm here to tell you, we'll get through it, trust me. I'll get you out of here in less than 90 minutes, maybe. Around the 13-minute mark, Cat says there's more reasons to believe in a God than not because everything seems to have a purpose. They come back to this later. We'll address this later. Around the 28-minute mark, Cat implies that the pyramids weren't built by humans with human technology, which, you know, Joe Rogan's going to bite on that. You know that. Interesting thought, right? And they talk about it. And like, if you want to listen to the whole thing, I'm giving you timestamps so you can check it out. But Cat Williams has an interesting thought that I never thought about because he says, look, there's this false idea that slaves were somehow physically stronger. And he says that doesn't even make sense. They didn't get treated well. They didn't get to eat that well. They didn't get to sleep well. Their lives were miserable. Why would they be physically fit and strong? I mean, obviously they do a lot of hard work, but it does make a lot of sense when you think about it like that. I thought, huh, that is interesting. And Joe talks about how the pyramids, they think that it could have been actually built by skilled labor. And Kat talks about how it's a complex and it's not about dead bodies, right? It's not about the pharaohs. It's a power plant powered by hot water springs underneath. And he starts getting a little squirrely on the answer because, you know, Joe's going to push for more, right? But he implies that if you learn history, that lots of people went to that area for various advanced technologies, which leads us into the conversation that I want to talk about. I'm going to play this clip for you. And the pyramid talk leads into talk about Thoth, the Emerald Tablets, and alchemy. Take a listen to this.
Giza is insane.
Right. Like,
it's insane.
Like, even Tesla says that this is where he came to get the information. But if you follow that information pathway, it leads you to this character called Thoth, right? And the Emerald Tablets of Thoth are literally mind-changing and mind-blowing, just because you understand when this was written and the terminology being used is
when was it written?
Far too accurate for now. So I'm sure that
here it is. Emerald Tablet, also known as the Smaragdine tablet, or the Tabula Smaragdina. Boy, I fucked that up. It's
Hermes,
a compact and
Trismegistus.
A cryptic hermetic text. It was highly regarded by Islamic and European alchemists as the foundation of their art. Though attributed to the legendary Hellenistic figure Hermes Trismegistus. How do you say it, bro?
Trismegistus.
Yeah. The text of the Emerald Tablet first appears in a number of early medieval Arabic sources, the oldest of which dates to the late 8th or early 9th century. It was translated into Latin several times in the 12th and 13th centuries. Numerous interpretations and commentaries followed. So what does it say, though? The Egyptian god Thoth. Okay, it says, beginning in the 2nd century BC onwards, Greek texts attributed to Hermes, a syncretic combination of Greek god Hermes and the Egyptian god Thoth, appeared in Greco-Roman Egypt. Those texts known as the Hermetica are heterogeneous collection of works that in the modern day era are commonly subdivided into two groups. The technical Hermetica, comprising of astrological, medico-botanical, alchemical, and magical writings, and the religio-philosophical Hermetica, comprising of mystical philosophical writings. Holy shit.
Is this weed talk, Joseph?
No, this is so legit.
So legit, my man.
So this dude was probably an alien.
Dude, first of all, there are no probablys.
Yeah.
That's the benefit once you hear it or read it.
Now, they talk about Hermes Trismegistus, right? And I'm shocked that Joe doesn't know how to pronounce this, or he was unaware of who this was. I kind of think he's often thinks he plays dumb so his guests can talk more because he's such a good guy. And another thing is, because I often, with Cat Williams, sometimes I think, man, this guy full of crap. You know what I mean? Sometimes I wonder. But then when he's put on the spot, he's very quick. Because Joe was stumbling on the pronunciation of Hermes Trismegistus. And Cat, and he's like, how do you say that, Cat? Cat immediately knows and says it. I'm like, okay, he knows what he's talking about. This guy he's not bullshitting. So they talk about the Hermetica books. There's actually, from what I understand, there's 5 books. A few of them are about practical magic and things like that. Later on, there were philosophical books written long after. Joe Rogan says this dude was probably an alien. And that's true. They do think that Hermes was an alien. Thoth, the ancient Egyptian god, came from the skies. That is the origin story. Thoth was an alien. That's the belief. It's not even a belief. It's the historical record written down. They claimed he was a god here to teach man wisdom. Now, let's unpack this. We're going to deep dive into this a little bit, okay? And that Wikipedia page that Joe reads is mad confusing, almost by design. So I'm going to present to you a paraphrase from the research I did into the Cambridge Handbook of Western Mysticism and Esotericism, okay? The short version. Hermeticism, this goes back to the Greco-Roman area, and they influenced all of occult thinking that we know of today. It's Hermeticism is the concept that wisdom or intellect or knowledge or gnosis, whatever you want to call it, this wisdom about the world and God and man is something that's meant only for the ones worthy to receive it, the initiated, the elites. All right? That's how it's been for hundreds of years. That's why you had mystery schools only for the priests of ancient Egypt. And the Hermetica books are contributions of this wisdom from Hermes Trismegistus, right? And it consists of the practical Hermetica from ancient Egypt, which talks about magic and astrology and alchemy, the foundations of Western occultism. And then you've got the philosophical Hermetica written long after, that was more of a philosophical ideas. Now, Hermes, as they talk about, was actually associated with Thoth from Egypt. Thoth was the god of writing, cosmic order, and magic. And then around the 5th century BC, the Greeks identified this other god, Hermes, and said, that's the same god as Thoth. And his name, Hermes Trismegistus, refers to Hermes the thrice great, repeating and reiterating great three times, because that's how great he was, apparently, right? So if you wanted to pronounce it, it'd be Hermes great, great, great. Stupid, but whatever. Now, I'm going to read you from the book because they define the doctrine more specifically. The basic doctrine of Hermeticism is the idea of an indissoluble interrelationship between God, the cosmos, and man, which implies the unity of the universe. God is the source of being that encompasses everything that exists. God is within himself, the world is in God, and man in the world. The Hermeticists shared the Stoic idea that the beauty and perfection of the world prove the existence of a perfect creator. At the same time, however, they were convinced that true knowledge of God was only possible through divine illumination. Now, call me a conspiracy theorist, but if you listen to the interview, particularly the parts where Cat Williams talks about how he knows there's a God, that's almost exactly what I would argue he learned from the Hermetica. It says here, Hermeticists share the Stoic idea that the beauty and perfection of the world proves the existence of a perfect creator. And we're going to come back to that later. And I'm not saying Cat's Illuminate confirm. He might be. I don't know. Maybe. But here's where we get conspiratorial, right? Because this flows into the ideas of the Illuminati, the illuminated ones. And you can hear right from the definition, they were convinced that true knowledge of God was only possible through divine illumination. These are the ones worthy to receive the information, only the initiated, the illuminated elites. That's the goal of the Hermeticism. And the texts later talk about how God was androgynous in both sexes. This is the alchemical rebus. Alchemy is just the art of Hermeticism. So they depict it in art. So when you see the alchemical rebus, which is male and female together, it's showing you God, all right? And we're going to come back to a couple of these things later on, if I recall. But Thoth or Hermes was also part of the Nag Hammadi text, and people believe that Hermes was Enoch. Listen to my full Book of Enoch breakdown I did a few weeks ago for more on that. But the point being is that Cat Williams, I think, is firing direct shots at the Illuminati. He knows. He knows what they know. The question is Cat Williams an initiate or an adversary or maybe a bit of both? I don't know. Because sometimes I feel like I'm a bit of both. I don't reject every single occult teaching. I really don't. I mean, there might be some truth in there. I feel like there very well could be. But as a Christian warrior, I'm probably not supposed to think like that, but I don't know. I don't know where this journey will take me. All right. Another hot takeaway here is that the ancient theology, they had a term for it. It's like, Principia Theologia or something. It's this idea of the universal connectedness of us and God and one consciousness. And you see this in a lot of occult teachings, like in the perennial philosophy of the Huxleys and things like that. The idea that we're all connected. That's the short version, all right? And that comes from the Hermetica. And another takeaway is that Thoth was an alien who gave us the Emerald Tablets. He was an ancient alien, all right? Which ties us into, of course, all the realms of ancient aliens. Isn't that something? So Cat Williams thinks that all the stories in entertainment that we're fascinated with could have been based on real beings like hobbits or Atlantis. And alchemy keeps getting brought up, right? Alchemy being the art of hermeticism. And it's how symbolically we represent this wisdom of the initiates. That's why we keep talking about rituals in entertainment and symbolism in movies. And that's why Carl Jung was talking about these archetypes and Joseph Campbell with the hero's journey, because it all relates to a universal truth according to the occultist. Doesn't that all make sense now? So Kat, now we're at the 42-minute mark. And Kat says that the difference between the... Difference between conspiracy theorists and world's mystery, conspiracy theories and world mysteries, is that there's nothing to a conspiracy theory because you're not using what you're producing. Now, I wish we would have dug deeper into that, and I thought, what is he talking about? I think he could be saying that conspiracy theories are more along the lines of fear-mongering, scaring people to take their attention, their energy, stealing their loosh, right? The money. And I see that. I see that. So not opposed to that. Whereas the mysteries are where the real truth lies. And Kat talked about how the world is a circle, and when you know the past, you know the future. All right. And that's why the mysteries are what I focus on more in my research. One of the reasons I changed the show title. I'm more interested in finding more about the spiritual truths and understanding our world versus some of the more conspiracy theory ideas, which are more materialistic in the sense of more temporal than spiritual. They are more obsessed with the news cycle and politics, which is crazy, because that's the exact thing that conspiracies, as a conspiracy theorist myself, that's what we warn about, is the news stealing your loosh and making you scared of everything. And then you got the conspiracy people who basically just mirror the news. What's happening in the news? Okay, here's why that's scary. Here's why you need to do the things, you know? And granted, like, I do this a little bit, right? I'm not opposed to that. I'm not firing shots. I'm just saying that there is a difference, and Kat realizes that as well. And that's why I try to sort of balance it more towards the spiritual element of things, okay? Okay, around the 46-minute mark, they talk about the worldwide government being smarter than they let on, about how they let us use the internet to lure us, right? They lure us into getting our information. Of course, this is big facts, right? We're going to talk about the big agenda of the internet in the conclusion, because these guys are talking about the future, and I can't help but think that they're on the money with all the ideas that they're presenting. We'll talk about that in the conclusion, so stick around. Around the 48-minute mark, they talk about how we only had advancement in a couple of areas. They talk about how the microwave hasn't changed much since its invention, and how reverse engineering alien technology is how we get there. Joe Rogan says fiber optics come from Roswell. I looked that up because I said, what? And Wikipedia tells me that the idea of sending guided refractory lights through cable, fiber optics, goes back to the 1800s. So I'm not sure what he's referencing. And to be fair, as a podcaster, it's very difficult to be 100% factual when you're having multiple off-the-cuff three-hour conversations a week. I mean, you're going to get some things wrong with zero notes, mind you, right? And yes, Joe Rogan is amazing. He's a national treasure. I don't care what anyone says. So maybe he was thinking of some other technology. I don't know. But from what I can see, I don't know if he was right about that. Next, Cat Williams talks about how alien visitation is actually part of a religion, okay? And this is very interesting, because if you followed my interviews with Diana Pasalko, you already know the score here. So take a listen to what he says, though. This gets really interesting.
Well, the alien thing is a bit of a religion to a lot of folks. They don't want to believe anything.
It's a necessary
fake
component.
Yeah.
Whatever religion you're a part of, at some point it says
you were contacted.
That there was a fight in heaven, and, you know, this happened and that happened.
Yep, every single one of them.
Everyone, without, nobody's telling a different story. Right. Everybody's telling the same stories.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you know that vagina and gold are universal things, because in everybody's story, none of these otherworldly interests, entities, had any interest in anything other than women.
And gold.
Right. Pussy or gold. Like, because, and you understand that now when you start learning about what's in space, because you can see that any element or any commodity that we sell here is abundant in space, like trash. You know, they found one meteor that was worth all the money
on Earth.
Yeah. 770 billion.
No,
it was trillion. It was another number. It's
some crazy number.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, they know that there's spots in space that have abundant minerals that are very valuable. And the thing about the Sumerian story, the Sumerian tech story, real ass story, may make everyone a billionaire on this earth. Everyone would be a billionaire.
But
every person would earn several billion dollars.
So it sounds jokey, right? But understand, somebody got this contract. Like, they broke this up into several worldwide contracts. Like,
10,000 quadrillion.
It's just there.
But here's the thing. If you got that much gold, is gold valuable anymore? Because one of the things about gold is that there's not that much of it. You know, if you look at, you ever seen the number of gold on Earth?
That's not necessary in capitalism. They showed us that with diamonds.
That's true. They could hide it.
It is about the perception of things. And if I buy up all of something, it is rare now.
Now, Cat makes a joke. He says that there's a universal interest in vagina and gold. All right. Tale as old as time. And, you know, it seems like a joke, but not really, because if you listen to my Book of Enoch show, you'll know that we're talking about the Watchers, the fallen angels, who are obsessed with procreating with the women. You could also tie in Zechariah Sitchin's theories on the Anunnaki, which actually Joe Rogan takes it there next. But this is mad interesting, because this is exactly what Diana Pasalka keeps telling us. She was on our humble little show twice, and then she was just a couple weeks ago on Joe Rogan's show. I haven't listened to it yet. I'm happy he's now available on Apple Podcasts again, because I'm too lazy to open up Spotify. I don't like Spotify. I don't know. I might try it, but I don't like Spotify because I'm not trying to watch the video. I got to play with it every time. I don't know. It just seems clunky to me. But anyway, in American Cosmic, my first interview with her in 2020, she lays out the idea that basically this invisible college that's making contact with aliens wanted her on their team so they could figure out a way of getting their alien religion going, right? And I'm paraphrasing the hell out of that, so. But that's kind of the idea I took away from it. And that's what it's all about, right? The alien religion. We've talked about it for many years. It's where they're taking us. Then just a couple minutes later, Joe Rogan talks about Zechariah Sitchin, and the reason we love gold is because the Anunnaki came here and made us slaves, and we mined it for them to take back to protect their atmosphere, is the theory, which all is ancient alien stuff, right? At the 58-minute mark, God bless Joe Rogan. Thank God he asked Cat Williams about his claim that he read 3,000 books as a child. He talked about this on Club Shay Shay, and that was one of the things I thought, is Cat Williams full of crap or what? I mean, come on, that's a lot of books. And Cat Williams explains it. He says that he could read a 150 to 200 page book in an hour. I don't know about that, but okay, maybe. Maybe he's a speed reader. And he said, look, I had 8 hours a day. We didn't celebrate any holidays for several years, no birthdays, no Thanksgiving, no Christmas. He said from the ages of 8 to 12, and he spent all of his time reading. And he specifies, he says, not most, all of my time reading. And he's specific enough that I actually believe him. He convinced me. He says how he said he's like, yeah. And he says some of those books I read more than once, like Little Women. I didn't understand it. I never read Little Women. I'm too stupid for that. I wasn't raised that cultured. But he's like, yeah, I had to read Little Women multiple times. And Joe asks, and Joe's very sneaky. This is why I'd be absolutely terrified to ever do Joe's podcast. Joe's sneaky. And he says, what's Little Women about? I was like, ooh, get him, Joe. You're going to get him. But then Kat's able to explain it. Kat's not lying. I believe Kat Williams. Fascinating exchange, though. You should listen to that 58-minute mark on the YouTube version. He says that reading led him to read about the Knights Templar. No bite from Joe Rogan, though. I can't believe he let that one slide. Okay. 2 minutes later, Joe talks about how disclosure is easing us into understanding all of these odd mysteries. He said 20 years ago, we would have dismissed all of these things. And he says that's why angels and demons freak him out. That's the thing. That's the alien thing. That's exactly what we're talking about. People said there's stories of angels and demons, and Cat Williams seems to support it. He says, look, if there's good and bad, take those to their extremes. Right? We know there's good. We know there's bad. Why wouldn't there be Black Lodge and White Lodge, right? Cat Williams talks about fusing DNA. I have no idea what he's talking about. Cat Williams says that Hades is described as a black hole, a bottomless pit where time doesn't exist and you don't die. That's terrifying. That scares the crap out of me, Cat Williams. Cat Williams talks, and then around the 1 hour, 10 minute mark, Cat talks about the theory that how the moon was put there because it rang like a bell. And this is an interesting theory. I went deep into the ideas of the moon when I wrote Conspiracy Theories in Unpopular Culture, the book. And the fact is, nobody can explain for sure why the moon is there. It's proportionally the largest natural satellite to any planet in existence. It's much too large for being at the location it's at. I'm not an astronomy guy. I can't explain that. I just know that I've read it, okay? It's way too big to be at the location that it's at. It does seem like maybe it was put there. A minute later, Joe talks about interdimensional entities and how people are designed to sort of create things, right? To keep increasing efficiency better and better until we can birth a new higher life form. And he suggests that maybe one that doesn't have emotions. And this is the evolutionary ideas from Ray Kurzweil when he talked about the singularity. And this is what I based, when I wrote The Dark Path, I based all the ideas about a digital matrix and how they're pushing us into it. That was the idea, right? We're going to come back to that in the conclusion. Let's get through the interview first. Hour 16, they crack some good jokes about the billionaires dying in the submersible. And they talk about how we have some really good underwater listening devices, and it's supposed to be for Russia. But Cat Williams says it's probably actually for aliens because we know much less about what's going on underwater than out in space. Then at the 1 hour 20 mark, they talk about Bob Lazar. Cat Williams implies that if Bob Lazar was bullshitting, he would have been much more creative about it. And Joe talks about how the retrieval pieces from these UFO artifacts are called donations. He got that from Diana Pasulka, right? I'm sure that must happen in their interview because that's Diana Pasulka is the one who talked about that in her books. Also, quick question. How high is Cat Williams? Oh my God. This guy's been smoking since the beginning of the show. I don't know how he's doing it. I'd be conked out. I don't know how people do it. I don't know how you become inebriated and have good conversations like this. I couldn't do it. Hour 24, they talk about how information is the most important asset and you used to need money to get information and now everything's free, okay? And again, refer back to the Hermeticism talk. The information, the wisdom, the gnosis, that's what this is all about. And we're going to hit this on the conclusion when we talk about the birthing of the internet and what the original vision was. Hour 25, they talk about how if you look at all the forms of life, They all use formulas, science, and math, and how this goes together with a cult and alchemy, which is true. That's where alchemy came from. It came from the scientist, Isaac Newton, and so on. And Cat Williams uses an example of Smurfs. He says Smurfs are the based on the homunculus. That's alchemy, right? And creating human life without a mother or a father. That's what the homunculus and the golem is all about. And Joe asks if that's true. He's like, are you sure about that? And he says that Gargamel made Smurfette, created her. I don't know. It's pretty wild. And we need to get Juan Ayala on here. He's the homunculus expert. But it's all perception, because if we want to do, he said, look, if you don't believe that we could clone a human or make a homunculus, you know, if you went to the doctor and said, hey, can I get a new leg? Can I get a new arm? Can I get a new heart? Can I get a new, you know, fill in the blank organ? They would come back and say, yeah, we could do that. So why not extrapolate that a little further? You don't think they could do that with an entire body? But golems are a part of the agenda, okay? We're going to come back to that in the conclusion. I know I keep teasing it, but we want to get through the interview first. It's the idea of fusing spirit into matter. Supposedly, it's the goal of the gray aliens, as per Bob Lazar's talk about viewing them. He had read that the grays view mankind as spiritual containers. That's what the human body was to them. Crowley's Moonchild novel is about this. Jack Parsons' Babylon Working is about this. Twin Peaks is about this. Facts. Big facts from Kat. Oh, here's a good clip I'm going to play for you. They're going to talk about how Hollywood isn't here to entertain you. It's here for propaganda. And this is exactly the conversation we need from these two guys. These guys are two guys that have been in circles close to those that would know this. So I value their statements on this highly. Take a listen.
Yeah, he's moving us into so many different directions all at the same time. The electric car thing, the internet satellite thing, and now this Neuralink thing. The Neuralink thing is the craziest.
Because all of these things are connected in these higher upper echelon conversations. I'm saying you see the same conversation with Tesla or Da Vinci, or like information is what is limited, and whole industries can be built upon your ability to know how certain things are going to hit certain people. And this was before we called things promotion and marketing. You know what I mean? That's Hollywood is not really there to entertain you. Like, that's great that that happens. But propaganda is something that is important to all civilizations.
Well, propaganda in Hollywood movies is built into the ingredients list. It's like, if you want flour, you need wheat. Like, you're going to have to get the wheat. And if you want to be able to make movies about certain subjects, you have to be willing to work with some people. And, you know, it would be nice if you made it so that this is what we're trying to accomplish. And this is showing the negative side of this other society. And this is our hero. It's our hero who's going to go do America's bidding and go over there. And you're like, okay. And those movies are successful. And so they continue this relationship. And you become a bit of a propaganda arm for the government. And in turn, they don't fuck with you.
Right. But that's what makes information so powerful is, you know, you don't care how people feel about the ritual. It's about, does following the ritual work? Yeah. And so you can fool yourself into thinking there isn't one, but the evidence will be clear. So like when I was like, these guys are wearing dresses. And everybody's like, oh, he keeps talking about people wearing dresses. No, it's
that
not.
Is a weird thing.
It's not like that. Look at it from a different way. Look at it. Show me one person that ever wore a dress in Hollywood unsuccessfully. That's how you understand what a ritual is. Mm. So 20 years ago, I knew that transgenders was going to be a thing. It wasn't because I was a prophet. It's just I had gotten so much information that I understood that things are secular. So I understood that the earliest I had seen that word transgender was Baphomet, the transgender. And so I knew that in the ritual of Baphomet, the transgender, to show allegiance to him, you had to kiss his ass ring.
Really?
And it said both of those things. So I knew that both of those things would become popular in the future. And that somehow calling people the goat would be normalized over the sheep being always the most popular reference.
God damn, we got some good weed, Cat. Jesus Christ.
This must be the weed talk.
But Joe breaks it down. He talks about how it works, the relationship between Hollywood and the propaganda. And then Cat Williams says, it's all about rituals, right? He said, have you ever seen anyone in Hollywood wear a dress that wasn't successful? And he talks about how he knew there was going to be a heavy emphasis on the transgender movement from his knowledge of the Baphomet. And he talks about these people having to kiss the ass ring of the Baphomet. And how this extends to calling people the goat, meaning people are sheep, which is, of course, Freemasonry. They use the sheep wool's cloth apron because that's the idea, is that they look at us as sheep. They are the elected ones. They are the worthy of the hermetic wisdoms, and we are not. Now, Cat knows what's up because that was one of the Knights Templar rituals, was to kiss the anus of the Baphomet. And again, if you want to take an occult perspective to the trans movement, their belief in the hermeticism is that God is androgynous. He is both elements of male and female polarities. And I really wish they would have gotten more into Baphomet. But again, no bites from Joe Rogan. No Knights Templar, Baphomet, he didn't even want to go there, I guess. An hour 40 in, Joe talks about the mark of the beast in the Bible, and maybe that's what these chips in the brain and Neuralink are going to do. It's technology tricking us into entering our bodies like vampires. Interesting analogy. It says you have to invite the vampires in to your home. Same with technology. You got to invite the beast into your brain. Again, with the idea of the golem. And then it's interesting because Cat Williams then talks about eating kids and agriculture. I mean, it's real quick that it flashes by, and he's talking about Saturn, because Cronos would eat his kids, right? And Saturn is the deity of agriculture. That's what the sickle is for. Cat Williams knows the script on the occult, right? He's OG alkaline granola woke. Make no mistake about it. I think that's why he's got that on his chain, right? I think it says woke folk. He knows the script. Again, Cat reiterates, every story, every civilization, the whole goal is pursuit of information. And this, of course, comes from Hermetica. Hour 51, Cat says the Tower of Babel, again, is about everyone speaking language, and that became hazardous because the information was spread too easy. 2 hours since 7 minutes, they talk about creator, the idea of a God as a creator or evolution. Cat Williams makes a good point to talk about the Bible verse on how God will feed the birds of the air. Because it's true, was there a bazillion birds out there? Who's feeding them? Right? God provides that. The world is designed perfectly, which also is a hermetic idea. We look around and we know all these devices, you know, this phone, someone created this, right? The idea of creation. This didn't just evolve from an acorn that fell, right? Okay, last clip. Joe Rogan talks about Hitler and the occult, right? And Cat Williams says that this is required for the path of learning, because these occultists would keep the knowledge and the gnosis of things that worked, not the things that did not work. It's the same teachings for hundreds of years. Take a listen.
of a war. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? All throughout history. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the only thing a rational person can take from Hitler's story is being able to see what if you had unlimited resource and ability to just follow global rabbit holes. You find out that most stuff that is labeled BS is not BS. BS is very hard to come by.
Well, the Hitler thing is real weird because the Nazis are really into the occult.
At some point in the information process that was required, so
it was required to be into the occult.
So in like the world of medicine, like certain things, before they had a label of being toxic, you just knew don't touch it. Like, you know what I mean? You didn't know what it was good for. But those occultists were the keepers of things that did work, not things that did not work.
Right.
So throughout history, that whole process of thinking, anything that could fall into the alchemy conversation was seen as occult-based. It meant doing something unnatural. Mm. So even like the blacksmith was considered a part of that world through most of history.
Really?
Because he had an unnatural relationship with elements. He was able to take this and turn it into things.
Forged steel. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. I always wondered, like, at the heart of alchemy.
All processes that are discussed at these pyramids and all... Because they're all processes.
Yeah. I've always wondered if alchemy is trying to regain lost knowledge. Like if at one point in time they did know how to just make metals. They did know how to create elements. They did know how to change lead into gold or whatever the fuck they wanted to do.
That's what this whole line consisted of.
Yeah.
But it required money and time, and all royalty, all kings, all great leaders of the world, this is what you paid for, was people that could make things happen. So being able to understand the weather and to then be able to manipulate it in any way possible was valuable all through human history.
So anything that could fall into the alchemy conversation, that was occult, that was hidden, that was forbidden. He talks about unnatural relationships with the elements. That's like, you know, the blacksmiths. And Joe asks if alchemy is just rediscovering knowledge and that's what all the leaders want, right? And it's interesting because they talk about how all the leaders of the world, what they wanted was people who could make things happen. Well, that language is interesting because what he's saying is that we're talking about magic and control. That's why Queen Elizabeth wanted John Dee, because he was able to channel entities and try to garner knowledge from astrology and occult wisdom. And a lot of politicians, they do consult with astrologers and things like this, right? All right, now we're going to zoom through the whole rest of it. 2-hour 20 mark, Joe asked Cat Williams, hey, if God's real, why are we here? What's this experience for? And Cat gives a great analogy. He says, it's like Call of Duty. It's a fun experience. Why do we make amusement parks? Humans get we get a full range of emotions. And there's this idea that, I've read this, and I think it was from the occult literature, that God created man as a way of seeing the reflection of himself. And I liken this to the idea that this is why people have babies. They want to see themselves in the babies. And God wanted to abstract himself so he could see himself in a mirror, so he made mankind in his likeness and image. 2 hours and 26, they talk about Illuminati global leaders. Joe Rogan postulates on what would have happened at the World Economic Forum. He says that's what Eyes Wide Shut was all about, is these people. He knows, right? He knows the deal with the Eyes Wide Shut. Kat says these people are suppliers, you know, Epstein, Weinstein. They provide fantasies for the elites. And Joe Rogan talks about how Bill Rogan, Bill Gates, can only hang out with certain people, right? He's so wealthy and so connected, he can only hang out with certain people. So eventually they lose sight of what normal people think. So they think they can say things out loud like, you'll own nothing and be happy. Because that's crazy talk. Same way the CEO of Kellogg's come out and said people should eat Frosted Flakes for dinner. I mean, the balls on these people, it's insane. And it would make more sense that they're just so out of touch. Look at Mark Zuckerberg. That guy's an alien walking around. Doesn't even know how to move his hands. 2 hours and 32 minutes. The reason Nikolai Tesla was taken out is because he wanted to give out free energy. They talk about how the plan is to get all of us on these controlled vehicles. Joe Rogan talks about how all the free services, like Google and such, they're just there to get your data. I agree with that. Cat Williams says that most of the worst crimes done globally are done by men with micro penises. I don't know. Is he implying that precognitive profiling is what they want to do, right? I don't know. That's an interesting thought. I never heard of that before, but it would make sense. What do billionaires do after they get all their money? Cat Williams talks about how the occult thing starts to intersect with the information thing, right? And then at 2 hours and 38 minutes, he says, this is why the Jewish people are so powerful. They share info with their young, and that doesn't happen with all cultures. So again, it's the valuing of this information, apparently. And Joe Rogan says, yeah, the healthiest cultures, they share information, which is interesting because, you know, the government wants to shut down TikTok. That's currently the largest form of sharing information, right? And my whole thing with that is, look, if you can convince me that this is dangerous, like, I'll take it off my phone myself. But Google, Facebook, all Twitter, they're all mining our data anyway. So, like, I might as well have a good time while we're doing it, right? 2 hour, 40 minutes, Kat says, if you're a Christian, you have to believe in extraterrestrials. And yes, I was actually talking about this in my first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, which I actually, ironically, handed a copy to Joe Rogan. I had him sign my copy because I cited him in the book, and I handed him a copy. I hope he has it this day. He probably threw it away at the Salt Lake City airport on the way out. But hey, that's all right. You know, Cat Williams talks about the Book of Enoch for a split second. Again, no bite from Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan talks about life extension and clones. 2 hours and 48, they talk about fluoride calcifying the pineal gland. I told you they went hard in the paint on this. I mean, this is 3 hours of nonstop good stuff. 2 hour 52, they talk about setting up illegal immigrants in hotels while there's homeless people watching that are like, what the hell? Cat Williams talks about how when the bees collapse, our society's done. They talk about how hard Mexican immigrants work, you know, and so on. Then 3 hours and 4 minutes, they talk about the Emerald Tablets really quick. I wish it would have had more time. And I think that there's a book. This is what I want to talk about. There's a book called The Kabbalion that summarizes a lot of these hermetic principles. It's a short book. It was written anonymously by the three initiates. Recall, we talked earlier about the three hobos from James Shelby Downard, because this comes from the Freemasonry idea of the three unworthy craftsmen, the three hoodlums, the three assassins, which is what they claim took out JFK, right? That's why it was part of the ritual. So in conclusion, we made it. One main idea to take away is this idea they talk about of the power of information or wisdom from the past and the future. Is it future or is it past? That's Twin Peaks. From alchemy of the past to technology of the future, evolving man. It's all connected. It's one circle, as Cat Williams would say. And the interesting idea is that we do currently live in what they call the age of information. We can all now access this wisdom that was meant only for the initiated at one time. So what does that mean? It's possible for everyone to be initiated. It is time to evolve humanity. The wisdom is out there, but now people need to understand it. And that is one role in the idea of the revelation of the method. We'll talk about the past of technology and how the internet is meant to fulfill the past occult goals, but we're going to start with the future, all right? One idea that they dance around the whole time, but they didn't quite hit the mark, is because they talk about cloning and universal connection via hermeticism, the internet, AI, aliens. But there's one specific story that connects all these things. It's the artificial intelligence golems. We talked about it with the Google Lambda episode a couple years ago, the AI from Google. Do you remember this? The guy, the engineer who said that, hey, man, this Google AI Lambda is getting sentient, he went on Duncan Trussell's podcast, and I did a show about this, and we revealed about how it was talking about blood sacrifices to Kali, and, you know, these guys, they view it as first contact. They think they birthed a new life form. They think they are gods. Because this Blake guy, he was an occultist, right? And Blake asked this Lambda AI at Google if it could become a golem and, you know, infuse divine energy into it for higher purposes. And it asks if it will have superpowers and what the purpose will be. And he talks about how the god of Google was Thoth. I mean, this is what the guy said. Blake Lemoyne was his name. Check it out. I'll see if I can put a link in the show notes if I can find it. But he said that they can rebuild the Great Library. Oh, really? The Great Library of what? Alexandria. That's where the Emerald Tablets were held. And they talk about ethereal golems reverse engineering a ritual from the past ethereal golems. And how his Thelemite friend, that's Aleister Crowley's religion, drew up sigils for this ritual of infusing a spirit into Lambda. It was an insane story when it happened. You'll have to listen to that whole episode if you don't know what I'm talking about. And I do a great robot voice, if I recall, that whole time. But recall how we were referencing the Hermetica holding all the secrets on this show, right? One of the ideas is that of universal connectivity. And we talked about the creation of the internet. I think I did a show on this. I did a couple shows talking about this. But I read this book called The Heart of the Internet from Jacques Vallée about the ARPANET. And this is the formation of the internet, right? Jacques Vallée, the alien guy, was basically one of the guys that invented the internet. Let that sink in for a second, all right? That's something. And this is from 2003, and the book talks about how Stanford's AI lab was preparing the masses for this new world. They saw AI and the ARPANET as the great equalizer to allow information to everyone, not just the elites. And then there's a question of, do the elites want this to happen, or are they trying to rein this in? And I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to read you a sentence from the book. It says, in the 1970s, McLuhan, that's Marshall McLuhan, announced that cosmic humanism, or something close to it, would spring from the universal appeal to electronic media. So they're talking about connecting us. This is the Hermetic vision, all right? And the book talks about how the internet was a universal information medium, and the knowledge was for anyone, everywhere, and this took out the gatekeepers, which I like that idea, right? And they predicted that this would introduce power structures that will try to retain the power by using censorship, which it seems like that's a thing, right? And what gets censored the most nowadays? A lot of these conspiracy theorists, occult sort of concepts. But the ARPANET was viewed as a social revolution, all right? And the revolution, the whole idea was to distribute occult ways of thinking. I'm going to read you from the book again. In other words, it should be possible to build electronic communities of experts, invisible colleges of kindred spirits. There's that invisible college term again, by the way. But they talk about this instant exchange of information goes back to New Age mystics from the 70s and LSD and the idea that psychedelics open your mind up to the idea of a connected consciousness, right? They explored the ideas of the ARPANET through workshops at Esalen using New Age consciousness ideas. That's what influenced all of these things, right? Someone had to conceptualize this. And Jacques Vallée was concerned that the project was to be taken over, that was going to be taken over by the military establishment, because you're connected with the RAND Corporation at this point with Stanford and all that, which is what happened. They used it as a weapon or a way to gain intelligence against adversaries, and now it seems like it's more of a control system, harvesting our data, right? That's what Joe Rogan and Kent Williams were saying. But underneath it, it was an occult agenda of changing our world, which is interesting. And Vallée, he talks about the rise of the internet leading to transcendence of the human soul and connecting us as a global species. And this global peace actually is a threat to a lot of people's money and jobs and ways of living and divisiveness that they keep trying to put into us. He quotes Russell Targ from Stanford, who called the internet the first manifestation of planetary consciousness. And that's exactly what the Hermetic wisdom would want. Did we evolve to the point where this is happening? Is this the time when mankind will finally plug in to be globally connected consciousness, the great overmind? This is, you know, Kurzweil's singularity, Elon Musk's Neuralink, the perennial philosophy, and so on. And it's a really interesting conversation. It's an interesting philosophical argument to be had. And it's interesting because I never put it all together the way that Cat Williams and Joe Rogan did, this idea that this is a circle and what's from the past is how you can predict the future. And this is what they want, right? And I'm still torn because I think it seems like there's two competing forces. You've got the occult, I don't know, idea of everyone should be initiated into the wisdom of how the world works. Then you've got the powers of censorship trying to keep us suppressed into our base frequencies and fighting amongst each other. And then it seems like maybe you've got a third way, which is religion or Christianity or whatever, right? So a lot of things to think about. That's why I said this is the most important show, right? Where else are you going to get a 3-hour deep dive into these occult conspiracy ideas than from the great Joe Rogan and Cat Williams? So, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. And I want to thank you personally from the bottom of my heart, you people that support the show. You're keeping it alive. I appreciate you so much. I'm very grateful. And I say that all the time, and I mean that all the time. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for your support. Till next time, stay positive.